Super Saver Julia's personal financial story should be familiar to you as a regular listener to The Money Show. But in case you don't, it isn't at least, Warren Ingram, her long-term personal financial advisor, who we are very familiar with, is on in the studio with us to remind us of the story behind Julia's savings principles. Warren, are you there?
I am.
Hi, Warren. Welcome very much. Welcome back to the show. I know you're a familiar person in studio. Please just remind us, for those of us who aren't necessarily familiar, of the background of the Julia Super Saver story.
What? Is there anybody in the world that doesn't know Julia?
Not one. Someone under a rock.
So Julia first chatted to me. She was the niece of a client, and my client said to me, look, my niece has just finished paying off her student loan. She's been working for a little while, and she's now got some money to save. Don't you want to chat to her and just give her kind of a game plan for what she should do with her money? And that was around about the year 2007. And so she came in kind of all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and said, you know, she wants to be financially independent by the time she's somewhere around 35 to 40. And I said to her, okay, you know, that's quite an ambitious goal, but it's definitely possible. You're going to need to save about a third of everything that you earn if that's your goal. And she looked me dead in the eye and said, that's no problem. You know, where should I save it? And I told her to start saving in just some exchange-traded funds. In 2007, there really only was one, you know, and that was the Satrix 40. And so off she went. And I said to her, you know, give me a call in a year and we'll see how you go. And, you know, fast forward a couple of years ahead, and she faithfully called every year, and we chatted every year, and she stuck to her goals. And every year I was waiting for her to come in with some excuses about why she didn't save this year.
You know, or she needed to draw down.
There was a reason. There would be an excuse. And every single year she didn't. She just came in saving more and more. And her career really took off. So her earnings went up, but what she did was continue to save a third of everything that she earned.
Yes.
And to the point now today where, you know, she's married, she's a mom of two children, they've got a house that's nearly paid off, and you know, they've done lots of traveling, lots of holidays, but they did lots of things right, you know, that I thought we could talk about, but basically got to the point where she made some pretty clear decisions in her mind early on to say there's things that are important to her, and lots of things that aren't important to her, and the things that are important she will save for and spend on, and the things that are not important she's simply going to ignore and not spend on. And I find that hard.
I think most of us do.
And that's the amazing thing about her is that, you know, what she did wasn't rocket science. I mean, you know, with all due respect to me, as the guy that kind of gave her the game plan, this was not, in all honesty, it wasn't rocket science. You know, it was kind of, you know, probably half a page of notes that she took and off she went. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't hard to do, you know, and it's because it's about our behavior. It's about decisions that we make every single day. So when we're driving to work, we go past our favorite coffee place where we can just stop in quickly and grab that coffee and go, or skip it and carry on and you know, have coffee at work, and the takeaway lunch, or you know, and the takeaway dinners and the nice cars. You know, South Africans, one thing about us, we love bling. I mean,
we and, do. You know, conspicuous spending is a thing.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the cars that are on our roads. You know, especially in the you know, Joburg and Cape Town, there's no chance with the size of our economy that we should be driving the cars that we do. But that's how we roll.
Very true. It's difficult to reconcile with our national accounts.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't mind debt. You know, our banks are really sophisticated. They make it very easy for us to get debt and to use debt and finance ourselves to the hilt. And you know, I know it's probably controversial, but I feel like it's kind of giving crack cocaine to the addicts. You know,
no, absolutely.
We just do it. And so to find people and Julia's not, I mean, by no means. I mean, since we started talking to her here on air, it's about 2013 now. We've come across hundreds of people that have sent us their stories that have not necessarily just followed her, but that are taking the tough decisions to take sacrifices and build up their financial wealth. So she is amazing, but certainly she's not the only one by any means.
So okay, so and to that point, I mean, as you say, it's been replicated, and not necessarily by following Julia, but there's, as you say, there's certain principles. Can you just remind us the basic principles beyond discipline, in terms of how to affect this change in our lives that those people that have given you their testimonials have applied?
So I think the first one is, as human beings, we find positive motivation much stronger than negative motivation. In other words, you know, when you are 30 years old, it's nearly impossible psychologically to visualize yourself as a 65-year-old who might not be working anymore, who now needs to live live on their capital that they've saved. So that's a quite a negative long-term thing that we just don't do. Whereas if we give ourselves some kind of a vision, we say to ourselves, you know, if for me personally, I love travel. That's my thing. I don't need to spend money on cars, but I do need to spend on travel. So I'll say to myself at the beginning of January, my wife and I will sit down and we'll say, okay, let's set aside the retirement savings goal for this year. If we hit that by June, that means that we've obviously got to, you know, do all the normal things, but that means we've got some money in the budget to now spend on travel for this year. It's a milestone, but also it's a short-term thing. It's not a 30-year goal. And for some people, you know, even a yearly goal is too difficult. So what, you know, what they should do is say, what really motivates me? So, you know, it's Women's Day, right? So, you know, you're working mom and you know, looking after children is really important to you and getting them the best education you can. And if that's your biggest priority, then saying, okay, fine. So let me set aside money on a monthly basis for my kids' education. And then I've got money to spend on myself for my luxury, my thing that's important to me. So it's a case of saying, what are the things that I can do, you know, that will motivate me to save? Yes, but also that I can reward myself and go. And so it becomes a very clear goal. Julia was remarkable in having a longer term goal. So, you know, it was a 10 or 15 year goal. But for the rest of us, you know, mere mortals, you know, having a monthly goal or a yearly goal is perfectly fine. But it has to be strong enough so that you drive past that coffee place every day and don't buy the coffee if that's your thing. If coffee's your thing, great. You know, then you got to not buy the expensive car and spend a bit more on coffee. You know.
So I'm very much like you. I'm not that excited about vehicles, but definitely the travel, and very lovely travel, is a very big deal for me. And my dad always said to me, even if it's 10 cents out of every rand, get into the discipline of savings and get into it early. And that is great for us. But we were speaking to me about, you know, foregoing the luxuries, which a cappuccino on the way to work is, which travel could be if I wanted to forego it one year or another. Money is really, really tight at the moment. You know, Julia had the fortune of, in addition to her discipline, having, you know, an upward trajectory in her earnings. What do we do for a person for whom in this economy where we are at the moment is forced to dig into their savings more than even more so than just having to put the money away?
Well, I guess this is where the two things happen. One is, you know, what sort of planning was done before now, and what sort of things can one do now? So maybe just talking up to these kinds of conditions that we're in now. One of the things is if you are slightly financially disciplined leading up to a difficult time, that means that you've set aside some money for the rainy day, the emergency fund. And to me, just to talk about what an emergency fund is, and I'm not avoiding your question, I'll answer it.
No.
But I think an emergency fund for me would be, you know, somewhere around 3 months worth of your expenses. So whatever you spend on a monthly basis, that needs to be set aside, you know, in a money market account or, you know, an accessible, you know, fixed deposit, that kind of a thing, where when life happens and the unplanned does happen to you, you've got money that you can call on that you don't need to immediately sacrifice savings, you know, cashing in your holiday fund or your long-term retirement funds, etc., because you've got your emergency fund. So to me, that should be rule number one for most of us once we've got rid of our personal loans, overdrafts, credit cards, all of those things. But park that for now. So that's what people should be doing. In a time like now where we're sitting in a position where, let's just say, you don't have an emergency fund and life has happened. You know, food's gone up, petrol's going through the roof all the time, and you know, employers can't afford, so they tell us to increase salaries you know, much beyond inflation, then that means that actually for you, even if your salary is going up at inflation, your real cost of living is accelerating faster than your income. So you getting poorer every month. And in a situation like that, and you're not really in the stage of luxuries, it becomes even more difficult trade-off decisions. So I'm not saying this is easy. I'm not saying that there's sort of a golden pill that we can swallow that will solve all our problems, but it becomes a case of saying, money troubles are things that you have to face head on. And very often it's a decision between a want and a need.
Absolutely.
And you hope that you've got the ability to make some of those decisions, and it's not just a decision between something I desperately need and something I desperately need even more. Mm-hmm. That's an incredibly difficult situation. And then if you are in that sort of situation, it's simply the hierarchy of needs. What is most critical to you? So putting some food in your stomach, getting a roof over your head, getting to work so you can earn a living, even if it's meager. I understand those. And so if you're in a situation like that, then there is nothing to do beyond making sure that you can actually just cover those basic needs. And if you can't, then, I think one of the things about South Africa is, we are good at sort of having a side hustle. After the show, the show last week, yes. I got a guy that mailed me and said, your show is all wonderful about saving, et cetera, but I'm an unemployed, mechanical, engineering graduate, and I can't do anything. Mm. And I just thought to myself, that's not true. Don't tell me you can't do anything. Maybe you can't get the job that you wanted in the field that you want, but surely if you've got time because you're not working, and you've got some motivation and the ability to at least just get somewhere where people can employ you, then offer yourself as a technician, for example, to an IT company. IT companies are always looking for techies with a bit of an ability to solve a problem.
Sure.
So that's for the unemployed engineer, for example. Obviously, not all of us are unemployed engineers.
Yes.
But my point is, if you've got a job and you can't make ends meet, then what are you doing on weekends to kind of do your side hustle? If I look at America, every second year I go and listen to the Sage of Omaha, Warren Buffett.
Yes.
And every single Uber driver outside of the big cities is doing a side hustle. That Uber driver,
for sure,
is not working full time. They're school teachers. They've got their own air conditioning businesses, whatever the deal is.
I mean, it's an engineer, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So why, not saying why aren't you doing that in South Africa? Sometimes it's just not possible, but don't just give up hope and say, I'm stuck in a hopeless situation. Find a way to kind of do the side hustle and then get a bit of extra income. And hopefully, I know it's draining, we're human beings. We're not machines. We can't function without rest.
Yeah.
But if there's a really difficult time and you're into the trade-offs of, extreme need, then the side hustle, might be the thing that gets you through now. And then you can quit the side hustle later or do it, more reasonably, later on in life. But I think it's a case of really making those trade-offs between what you absolutely want and what you have to have to get by.
For sure. Fantastic advice. If you have any advice, any questions or need to seek any advice from Warren, please do make sure you call in. We are, of course, just going to take a quick break. We'll stay with Warren. We're still in the studio here with Warren Ingram, personal financial advisor and executive director at Galileo Capital, giving us some really sound, simple, practical and applicable advice on how to save our money. If you'd like to ask Warren anything, please do give us a ring. It can be about anything. It doesn't need to be about Julia's plan, but there may be some constraints. Now, Warren, we were speaking just before the break about the fact that, people can always have a side hustle, and, especially those who are dealing with the extreme of having to choose between something you need and that you really need, not just cutting out luxuries. Let's say I do find my side hustle. Let's say I am an Uber driver and an engineer, and I fill my weekends and I don't necessarily go out and party. Luckily for us, obviously, we have the access to your insight and your knowledge here on the radio. Now, what do I do when I want to put it to work? What if I'm not a person who can meet the threshold of a savings plan or a savings product, an ETF, for example, that you were able to put Julia into that was able to compound to the extent that it has?
So that used to be a really big hurdle for South African savers and investors. I think the old days it was sort of $500 a month into a unit trust was the minimum that you could save, or $300 a month into a savings product from an insurance company. But nowadays there are more and more of these fintech businesses that have opened up their the market to people who can save amounts literally as little as 10 rand at a time.
Really?
And so that's not really an excuse anymore that we can give ourselves not to save. So I would say, we often talk about one of those fintech businesses here is a business called Easy Equities, and it's web driven. So you don't need to go into a branch or something like that. Really easy to kind of open up. And my view is there are more and more of those kinds of businesses, opening up, and they're not ripping investors off anymore. But that product providers are kind of coming to the party, and their fees are reducing and transparency is getting better, etc. So when people say to me, I can't afford to save, if they've got 10 bucks, they can save it and they can invest it and it can start growing. And I just don't think that's a valid excuse anymore. And the thing about, something like an exchange traded fund, an ETF is, you buy one and there's one, for example, where you can buy literally the biggest stock markets in the world. If you're searching for it, it's the MSCI World Index, and it's all the stock markets in the world index in one thing, and you can buy it with 10 bucks. Please don't tell me that there are people out there that say, if I don't have 10,000 rand, I can't save. Well, here you go. You can. And so that's a good one. And there's one on the South African Stock Exchange where you can buy the 40 biggest shares on the market with one thing. And it doesn't require expertise. It certainly doesn't require someone, to kind of pay me to come, to tell them that. We're doing it on air every Thursday, and they can listen to all the podcasts and get all the information they need. But that's there. It's there, Just go and open the account. And I think a lot of the time, we find as human beings reasons not to do things. We don't have the motivation or the vision that's strong enough to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sacrifice something else that's just a want, and I'm going to start building up my capital and become financially independent.
Okay, fair point. Okay, well then, I guess because I was going to say there might be other areas of access, for example, the internet and such, but actually if I'm an Uber driver, I'm on a smartphone, so you're right. I have no excuses at all. I'm trying to represent the people. Okay, well, we've got
Maybe just on that point. So let's just say that, it's true to say that there are huge portions of our population who still don't have access to the internet, and data is really expensive. And fair point. But for example, in South Africa, we've got an incredible savings, and it's not an investment tool, but it's definitely a savings tool called the Stokvel. And to me, it does two brilliant things. One, it uses positive peer pressure because you've got 3, 5, 10 members of your Stokvel group. You've made a commitment to each other. You meet regularly and you hold each other to account to do what you promised you're going to do. And actually, all you're really doing with that, if it's not obviously for a specific purpose, if you start a savings Stokvel with friends or family or work colleagues, you're doing it to build up capital so that at a point in time, you might have enough capital then, whether it might not be a monthly amount, to then go in and say, right, I've now got enough money to commit to a long-term investment. And I love those. There's a reason why people who run, for example, in running groups run more consistently and better. And it's because of that positive peer pressure. So you've got something where you've got the power of positive peer pressure, but you've also got the ability as a collective to bulk your money together. And then maybe you get some buying power to start making more investments. And that's South Africa. That's the way we roll here. We find solutions to these problems.
So Warren, I'm going to cut you off there because we've got a limited time and we've got a couple of questions coming through for you. The first one is from Lara in Cape Town, who has a very pertinent question. Lara, please go ahead.
Hi there. Hi, Warren. I'm a big fan and follower.
Great. Thanks.
I used to follow Julia's rule and save a third with my partner. And now, a year ago, we bought a house and all our money goes into the bond.
Into the black hole.
Yes. So what would your advice be?
So I hate debt, and so to me, I'm not necessarily saying that you should sell the investments that you built up, before you bought the house, but I would definitely be paying off more than what's required into the house, and as fast as possible get it paid down. And the nice thing about overpaying money into a bond is that that's also becomes the beginning of your emergency fund. The extra money that you've got there is your emergency fund. So kill the debt. Don't make the banks rich. Make yourself rich.
Okay.
Great. Thanks very much for that question, Laura. We have one more question from Michelle in Four Ways. This is a controversial one. Michelle, go ahead.
Oh, I thought fitting for Women's Day.
So glad.
Yeah. So, Warren, I've been married for 8 years and together with my husband for 11. And I recently came to light that his RA is 5 times more than mine. I don't work. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I look after the kids. He does work very hard, but how do you approach something like that?
So,
I don't know. I don't think that's fair.
I agree. And the thing about divorce is that, I mostly meet the divorced women. I don't, for some reason, seem to meet the divorced men. But it seems to me in South Africa, divorced women get the raw end of the deal. So I do think that that's something that, you know, that married women should be really conscious of, especially where they've had to sacrifice their careers. And so very simply, what you should be doing is, it doesn't make sense to have an RA if you're not working and earning a taxable income because you don't get the tax benefits. But, you know, start compromising by saying, okay, I'd like you to commit a bit less to your RA, and let's put more money for me into my tax-free savings account, for example, where build up fill up your capacity for a tax-free savings, then maybe do a unit trust so that you get kind of a mix between the two of you and an equal balance between the both of you. 100% agree. You know, it shouldn't be that you know, the bulk of the money and the investment sit in your husband's name. It's not right.
Certainly not 5 times. Warren, as always, we so enjoy your insights, and thank you very much for giving us some advice, financial and maybe even a little bit psychological. That's Warren Ingram, personal financial advisor and executive director at Galileo Capital. Always grateful to have you in here for our personal finance feature.